evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, September 18, 2024. An association of pilots in South Sudan calls on the government to enact aviation laws.
Regulations of South Sudan civil aviation have not been passed by the parliament. The Act of Civil Aviation actually is the one that will give power of the regulation of South Sudan civil aviation to be used in order to advise on safety side of the work operations of the plane.
And some South Sudanese living in Kenya express mixed reactions to the move by the unity government to push elections.
I'm really pleased that they've extended the election for another 2 years, maybe up to 2026, and that is very good because the government now should take the 2 years as a chance to be able to settle themselves, as a chance to be able to prepare to hold this election.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan's Pilots Association is calling on the government of South Sudan to enact aviation laws. Upper Nile State has witnessed 4 plane crashes this year, prompting an investigation into the causes of the repeated crashes. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwot reports from Malakal.
South Sudan's aviation industry is under scrutiny after at least 4 crash landings in Upper Nile State this year. Captain Samson Ohide Halomoro, secretary of South Sudan's Pilots Association, says the country has no aviation laws that control companies offering air transport.
Regulations of South Sudan civil aviation have not been passed by the parliament. The Act of Civil Aviation actually is the one that will give powers of the regulation of South Sudan civil aviation to be used in order to advise on safety side of the work operations of the planes. Most of the planes, they have been controlled by their civil aviation, especially the countries of registration. We really hoping that we had last time that the thing was already just reached the start breeding, but we are now asking when is it going to come out for it to be signed into law. Because without regulations, there will be no safety officers here. We really need the country to push for the laws.
In August 2024, a World Food Program plane crash landed without its landing gear at Malakal Airport with 35 passengers on board. One passenger who was on board that flight, Ayai Dengtir, says the crew was not professional.
There were people who panicked, but most of us were resilient. So what we were doing at the Tarafi was talking, listening to some music and even videos, because the crew members were the one affected mostly more than us. They were not talking, even in the flame. So we were doing some sort of Tarafi, joking and all this. So that one was actually making a great calm to the other people who panicked.
Malek Ball, who witnessed the plane crash land, says he was wondering how the plane would land without landing gear.
The plane land down like this. Is it? The pieces will come back to us also. So we run first and then we come back. Huh?
Our hand was just in our head. And then when it is stopped like this, you see, thank God. We were the first people who were celebrate for the life of those people who are inside.
Bol Majok Lual, acting director of Malakal Airport, says a committee is investigating the causes of repeated plane crashes at Malakal Airport.
All these 3 incidents of plane crash, there is no fault in the airport or something within the airport leading to this incident. What we can say is that it might be a technical fault or problem from the plane or captain. Answer to these questions will only be clear if investigation committee dig deep and come out with their findings.
World Food Program released a statement on August 9th confirming that all 35 passengers aboard the flight from Aban survived the crash. The UN agency said the World Food Program and the commercial operators were working together to get to the bottom of what happened. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwot, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
From Malakal, we move to Nairobi, where South Sudanese living in Kenya say they have expressed mixed reactions to the government's decision to postpone elections by 2 years. As we hear from William Sandemabor in Nairobi, some South Sudanese support the extension while others oppose it.
South Sudanese Simon Lodai Salvatore says he supports the government's decision to postpone elections, arguing that preparation for a free and fair elections process needs time.
So I'm really pleased that they've extended the election for another 2 years, maybe up to 2026, and that is very good because the government now should take the 2 years as a chance to be able to settle themselves, as a chance to be able to prepare to hold this election.
Emmanuel John Gore, another South Sudanese living in Nairobi, says the government appears to focus on staying in power rather than serving its citizens.
When I heard in the beginning about the extension of the election period again for 2 years, it was kind of astonishing, you know, to hear that they have another extended it for another time. It is something that is properly not decent for the leaders who are to rule people in accordance to the will of the citizens. Can you put it in this simple term, playing mind games on the people.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says last year about 95,000 South Sudanese refugees resided in Nairobi and other urban areas, with the close to 8,000 to 10,000 refugees finding a home in Nakuru, Kenya. Matthew Poth, another South Sudanese living in Kenya, says the government's move undermines democracy.
It shouldn't be that the government has to extend this election again to another level. It should be done because we have to choose to elect the leader, and also for the current situation of South Sudan, it really need the Bureau of Citizens, not the Bureau of Government, because the government now is working at its level, but it's not the level of citizens, because it's working at its own interests, and this shouldn't be. And for us as citizens, we have right that the government must should listen to us. If this government should continue like this, then we have right also to claim. We have right to write and to react and to claim that the government is not right.
Many South Sudanese say they feel abandoned by their leaders, who they say are doing little to address the dire needs of their populations and to restore stability across the country. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Nairobi, Kenya.
We'll bring more updates and reactions from diplomatic missions in South Sudan in our broadcast for tomorrow. Authorities and community leaders in eastern Equatorial State say a washed-out bridge in Awinki Bol village has cut off service delivery to communities affected by heavy rainfall. The Commission of Magui County is calling on both the state and national governments to act. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Polepole Olum, Commissioner of Magui County, says engineers are assessing the bridge, which was washed away after weeks of heavy rains. He says the community prepared a makeshift boat for crossing the river.
We went there with a team for the company called Rhino Star. They have come to see how the machineries will pass and how the material will be transported. And the way we have seen the roads, even leading to wind from Abara, it also give me a clue that even the road needs to be worked on so that the materials and the machineries can easily reach there.
Lokang Mark is a healthy officer in Owink Bull. He says the loss of the bridge has cut some communities off from services.
We have the health facility where it helps people a lot here. So the problem is that we have pregnant mothers on the other side. They have to come for the services on this side. There's no way out where they come there and then at least receive these services from here. Term of health. So there are some of them being cut off.
Joseph Oyet, head chief of Owinki Bol Village, says many communities are not able to reach the market to buy and sell goods.
So they are really very affected for now because they used to come to the other side of the center for the medication and they're looking for the goods like buying dolls and the rest. So they could not manage to cross the river to the other side. Then again, to grant their flow, they came to the other side of the river. They could not manage. Always they are moving from that Boma of Parashele to the other side of Uganda. They're buying drugs, they're buying salt and the rest.
Norman Charles is the Director General of the State Ministry of Road and Bridges. He says the assessment report from Rhino Star Company will be submitted to National Ministry of Roads and Bridges, and the bridge will repair in 3 weeks.
Could not see the abutments of the bridge, the both sides of the bridge were all moved by the water. So in our assessment, the bridge needs to be reconstructed or rebuilt. And this rebuilding of the bridge, we came up with the BOQ and we came up with a new design.
Most residents in Owinkbull are farmers, and the washed-out bridge has left them disconnected from the rest of South Sudan and markets in other parts of Magui County. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from the Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces battle for the control of Al-Fashir town in Darfur. Find out more on this after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and our words of wisdom for today comes from Bantu in Unity State.
I'm James Roy Majok from Mayam County in Unity State. I have a wise word from my community. In English, it is the grass that knows where the snake goes. Thanks.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. UN Security Council members renewed calls for an immediate cessation of hostilities and the withdrawal of belligerent threatening civilian safety in Al-Fashir after the town witnessed fierce fighting between Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, urged the RSF to halt its attack, including bombardment, destroying infrastructure and threatening civilian lives, and fulfill its commitments to the international community to protect civilians. Joseph Sigley, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi RSF ignoring calls from the UN Security Council and the United States.
Well, I think it's a clear sign that the RSF believes that it can act with impunity. And it's a posture that it has taken really from the beginning of the conflict. There aren't any other security forces or monitoring bodies that are operating in the region that can curtail the RSF's activities or even authoritatively document the RSF's abuses. So they see it as a green card to continue their attacks. And I think we should be clear that they don't just have military objectives, but this is a continuation of the ethnic cleansing we saw in the Darfur conflict from 2 decades ago, where the RSF sees it as an opportunity to displace African populations and seize land for the Arab militias that are operating in that region and across parts of the Sahel. And the humanitarian costs are extremely high. There are some 750,000 internally displaced people in Al-Fashir now, and estimates are that some 15% of these internally displaced people in some of the camps, so we're talking about 75,000 people, are facing famine. And so the situation has been building up for all year. And now we're starting to see the real tragic outcomes of this. And the worry is that if Al-Fashir were to fall, we're going to see even more mass atrocities. So I think the fact that the RSF is ignoring these calls really speaks to its sense of insulation from international pressure right now.
Tom Perriello, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, said that the members of the Aligned for Advancing Life-Saving and Peace in Sudan group, USA, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Switzerland, African Union, and the UN, formed in Geneva last month, continue to push for more humanitarian and civilian protection measures in Sudan. What else could this regional and international alliance do to push the two warring sides to negotiate an end to the conflict in Sudan?
Well, one thing they can do is to raise attention and put more pressure on the external actors that are funding the respective militias. It's been known that the UAE has been the major sponsor for the RSF. Moreover, there are reports that Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Iran in various ways are sponsoring the Sudan armed forces. Yet, despite this growing public awareness, there hasn't been that much external pressure on these entities that are funding the parties. And I think that is something that the negotiating group can give more attention to, especially since a number of members of that group are in fact parties to the conflict through their sponsorship. And so they have vested interest, and by being around the table, they can potentially hash out those differences and agree on some sort of ceasefire and an agreement that they would monitor one another's funding support and material support for the respective forces. And, you know, I think it really highlights, you know, the complexity of this conflict, that we aren't just talking about the individual military actors on the ground, but the regional, international actors that are seeing advantages in sponsoring one side or the other as well.
That's Joseph Sigley, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. Zimbabwe's government has given in to pressure from rights groups and is now providing free treatment to women with obstetric fistula, a condition that makes it hard for mothers who went through difficult labor to control their bowels. Columbus Mavunga reports from Chinoy, a farming and mining area about 150 kilometers west of Harare, one of the areas in Zimbabwe where early marriages are common and where the treatment is taking place.
These are young women at Chinoy Provincial Hospital after government gynecologists have performed the surgery to address obstetric fistula. They are clearly happy, as one of them, we shall call Chiedza, a 23-year-old mother. She has not been able to control her bowels since giving birth to her boy 7 years ago. She says, when I gave birth, I tore my private parts, so I couldn't hold my feces. It would just come out on its own. I would just feel something on my body flowing. I stayed like that because I could not have money to seek services of gynecologists to correct my condition. So when I heard about this free service on a WhatsApp group for women, I called a toll-free number which was there and I came here. So I'm now going to live a comfortable life. I can now perform even house chores comfortably, says Chienza. Another woman who wants to be called Tendai ruptured her bladder after a protracted labor at home while giving birth at the age of 16. Tendai says, I would share nappies with my baby so as to block my smell from others. At one time, I almost committed suicide because people kept on laughing at my condition. I thought I'd been bewitched till I came here and saw that there are some people in my condition. I'm grateful for this procedure, for it has given me hope, says Tendai. Nom Velo says she can't wait to show her new self to her community once discharged. The WHO estimates that between 50,000 and 100,000 women experience obstetric fistula every year, and about 2 million women in sub-Saharan Africa are living with this condition. Dr. Stanley Ngwaru, a senior gynecologist in Zimbabwe's Ministry of Health, says the condition is an abnormal communication between the woman's genital tract and the urinary tract or the rectum.
And they suffer shame and they suffer social segregation. It's very common in young women, because the genital tract is not well developed, and when they go into labor, they are more likely to suffer from obstruction, and this can lead to these communications are developing between the genital tract and the urinary tract and the rectum.
Lucia Masuga, head of Amnesty International in Zimbabwe, says she commends the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa for offering the free service. However, she says the government needs to develop strategy to prevent this condition among young women.
If we therefore facilitate access to sexual reproductive health services for this group, it will reduce instances of early pregnancies and in turn reduce cases of obstetric fistula. Whilst treatment is a positive development, it's akin to trying to mop water from an open tap. You will never really be able to mop that water as long as the tap is open.
Amnesty International in Zimbabwe last year pleaded with Parliament push the government to make obstetric fistula treatment a national issue after its research had revealed that the condition was rampant among young ladies in Zimbabwe and were not getting enough attention. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Chinoy, Zimbabwe.
Still on health matters, maternal mortality remains a key issue affecting women of reproductive age in Kenya. The Ministry of Health says more than 6,000 women die in Kenya each year due to poor access to maternal health facilities. New technology developed by university students is helping healthcare workers remotely monitor conditions of pregnant women and their children without physical visit to hospital. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi on that development.
David Saruni, a computer science student at Kabarak University in Kenya's Rift Valley region, is one of the students involved in developing the application known as Mama's Hub.
The project's objective is to prevent the onset of preeclampsia, which may cause death to mothers and even infants after their delivery. So this project is going to save lives.
The World Health Organization defines maternal health as the health of women during pregnancy, childbirth, and the postnatal period. Despite a global decline in maternal mortality ratio over the past two decades, WHO says the Africa region still lags behind. Africa accounts for more than two-thirds of the global maternal deaths. Mama's Hub allows health providers to remotely monitor conditions of pregnant women and attend to them. The women wear a smartwatch that monitors their vital signs such as blood pressure, heart rate, and temperature. The monitor is connected to a mobile phone which relays the information to a database. Healthcare workers at Mama's Hub can review the information and refer women to nearby doctors if they are concerned. Artificial intelligence enters the picture here, as patients will also be able to obtain prescription through a chatbot which is now in the testing stages. Moses Thiga was principal investigator of the Mama's Hub project.
If the onset of the condition is detected before 20 weeks, then there are interventions that can be instituted. The same case with others like gestational diabetes.
The National Research Fund-supported technology also enables digitization of prenatal care records of patients for easier access. It has been tested in prenatal care clinics in the Rift Valley city of Nakuru with the aim of rolling out to the rest of the country. Nakuru County Chief Nursing Officer Wendy Tirop says the digitization has improved record tracing.
Digitalizing this document is, it makes it very easy for the facilities, like if there is the interlinking between the facilities. So it makes it very easier for the healthcare provider to be able to trace and identify mothers who have failed to come to the clinic and do a follow-up.
The WHO says sub-Saharan Africa accounts for nearly 70% of maternal deaths. Health experts say such innovations like Mama's Hub can help save the lives of women and newborns. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
For more information on our programs, please send us your messages on +1 202 630 8011, and we shall sample some of your voice and text messages every Friday. This is your program. We need to hear from you what we are doing better and what we are not doing better, and we will be transparent with your remarks. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, September 18, 2024. We now leave you with Lomerica Jazz Band and their popular song, Salam Fi Sudan. Listening to Lomerica Jazz Band and the song Salam Fi Sudan. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bob Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.